This season's UEFA Champions League has already given us many memorable moments.
Messi all the way across, Suarez slides in, and that is seven.
Aubameyang taking on Sergio Ramos, delivers into the middle, equalising goal! Marco Reus has got the touch, Dortmund are back from two behind to level it. Gundogan! Yes for Manchester City! How they've turned this around! Mertens dummies the shot into the penalty area. Oh, it's a super goal! Napoli into the last 16 as group winners.
We'll look back at the group stage and then ahead to eight huge round of 16 ties, including Paris Saint-Germain versus a very familiar foe.
Barcelona advance with Suarez. It's a strong run. Can he get the shot away? Oh, it's squeezed it in. They've doubled their lead and it's Luis Suarez. All his own work. A second away goal for Barcelona. Paris now really up against it.
On this Matchday Live podcast special, you'll also hear from Andre Silva, Jose Callejon, and Pep Guardiola during our in-depth preview of the knockout stages. Plus, we'll run down who you voted into the UEFA.com 2016 Team of the Year. Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Rob Daly. Match days 1 to 6 gave us 278 goals and 16 qualifiers for the UEFA Champions League knockout stages, which get underway on Valentine's Day, the 14th of February. And there's so much to talk about with my guests today, UEFA.com's expert team of Paul Saffer and Chris Parrott. Now, I mentioned this just before we started recording the show. I want three words from each of you to describe this season's group stage.
I've gone with big guns fire.
I've gone with Messi scores goals.
Okay, not bad, Chris and Paul. We'll also be getting to the listeners' thoughts as well. We're going to be reading out some of your tweets later on in the show. Some of you have been messaging in to say who you think is going to win the UEFA Champions League already. And we're also going to be revealing your most memorable moments of the group stage. So if you did tweet us, continue listening because we might read out yours. Later, we're going to preview the round of 16 in detail, but we'll start with a look back on the 2016-17 UEFA Champions League group stage, starting in Group A, where the big clashes were both entertaining draws.
Alexis Sanchez equalises for Arsenal. It's Paris 1, Arsenal 1.
Lucas Moura with a header. It's 2-2 via a deflection from Iwobi. It's Arsenal 2, Paris Saint-Germain 2.
So some great games between Arsenal and Paris Saint-Germain this season. Let's just remind you of how the standings finished in Group A. Arsenal won it with 14 points. Paris Saint-Germain 12. Ludogorets finished third and go into the UEFA Europa League. Great achievement for them. Basel finished bottom with just 2 points. And really, Paul, most of the drama that we saw in the group came in those two ties between Arsenal and Paris Saint-Germain.
It did. Of course, they met on the opening day and Cavani scored almost instantly. Then in pretty much a summary of what's happened in this season, then proceed to miss a whole load of chances as well. Paris could have won that game before Arsenal came back. I mean, Alexis Sanchez had a great season for Arsenal, got them that draw. But Cavani could have put that game beyond them. Then in return, it looked like Arsenal were heading for victory. And then Iwobi, who was about to be substituted, his replacement was actually stood on the touchline when he flicked in that own goal. And at the time, it seemed to have cost Arsenal first place. But Paris then managed to fail to beat Ludogorets and Arsenal pipped them. For the first time in several years, Arsenal finished top of their group and got seeding in the round of 16, even if it may not necessarily have helped them in the draw very much.
No, both teams got very difficult ties. Paris Saint-Germain against Barcelona and Bayern will face Arsenal. We'll get onto those later on, Chris. A frustration for Arsenal, I imagine, because it's the first time they've won their group in something like 5 years.
Yeah, it is. And it's the first time they went through a group unbeaten since they reached the final in 05-06. I have to echo what Paul said. I think Paris Saint-Germain will be sitting back and they will wonder how on earth they didn't win the section. I think they were the better team in both of the games against Arsenal. I think Edison Cavani, while scoring, did miss a number of chances, particularly in London. And then on match day 6, you would have backed them to beat Ludogorets, who were a breath of fresh air, really. They only picked up 3 points with 3 draws, but they had so much to play for and they got a wonderful draw and fair play to Arsenal. They went to Basel. Lucas Perez scored a hat-trick and they won that game to go through comfortably. For me, another key game, I think, was match day 4, Ludogorets against Arsenal. The Bulgarian champions were 2-0 up. And at that stage, Arsenal were dead and buried for top spot. It looked like it was going to be a famous night. Arsenal fought back to win 3-2. Özil with a brilliant winner. And I think from basically being out of contention to win the section, that night Arsenal roared back and ultimately did just enough. But how? I'm still not quite sure.
I think Arsenal are a much more robust team this season than they have been in recent years. They've always had the talent. I think this seems to be a team that's really coming together as a team. We've seen it recently with the performances of Olivier Giroud as well, who may not have necessarily stood out in the UEFA Champions League, but started to play really well in the Premier League. We saw the games you mentioned, the game in Paris and, of course, the game in Basel, which was potentially tough. So many English teams have messed up there, but Arsenal didn't. They've won the group, and that's why they may be going into the Bayern game, which we'll discuss later, with a bit more hope than in recent years.
One of the points you made there, Chris, is one of the highlights someone's tweeted in. Carl Lockhart on Twitter, using the hashtag MatchdayLive, says Ozil scoring the game-winning goal for Arsenal at Ludogorets was his highlight, and he says it ended up being key to winning Group A as well, and he's absolutely spot on. Credit to Ludogorets, Chris, for their brilliant campaign. Basel will be disappointed to finish bottom of a section. They would have imagined they'd be finishing third.
Yeah, finishing third, and maybe in their wildest dreams, hoping, given how many shocks they've caused in the UEFA Champions League in recent years, that they might have been able to push Arsenal and Paris Saint-Germain. They got nowhere near in the end. Ludogorets making a bit of history to go through. They got to the stage when they had nothing to lose, so they did just go out on the attack. And, you know, they could easily have won that game in Paris. But just to go back to the tweet, Mesut Ozil was important, but Alexis Sanchez this season, arguably, along with Leo Messi, maybe one of the best players in the group stage. And if they are to progress and go further, then Alexis Sanchez is going to have to perform as well as he did in the group stage.
Certainly. OK, on to Group B, where qualification wasn't decided until match day 6, with three teams still fighting for two round of 16 places, including Benfica and Napoli, who met in Portugal.
Mertens dummies the shot into the penalty area. Oh, it's a super goal! Lovely feint and dribble from Dries Mertens. He's scored one and made the difference for Napoli. Into the last 16 as group winners. It's a night they will savour.
Well, it was such a dramatic end to Group B, and one of the few groups that did go right down to match day 6. Napoli winning it with 11 points, Benfica 8, Besiktas 7, and they now go into the UEFA Europa League. Dynamo Kiev with 5 out of European football altogether. Paul, it was mighty close going into that final set of games.
Well, it was, because of what happened on match day 5 when Benfica went 3-0 up in Istanbul and Besiktas somehow came back to draw it 3-3. That kept that group alive. It actually left Besiktas in quite a good position, then going to Dynamo Kiev knowing the result would take them through. Of course, it all went horribly wrong for them and they ended up getting beaten 6-0, and Benfica and Napoli progressed. And I think Napoli was their very solid performances. We know how tough they are at home. They started to show some good away performances as well this season, which they are going to need going forward in the competition. This doesn't look like a group, and probably never looked like a group, where maybe the winners of the competition would emerge. But Napoli have boosted their reputation generally, despite losing at home to Besiktas, which was the one little blip.
I suppose part of the problem has been for Napoli this year is the Higuain factor. They lost him, Chris. And Arkadiusz Milik got injured early in the group stage. And we just heard the goal there from Dries Mertens, decisive for the back end of the group stage. He was key in playing as a makeshift striker and getting them through.
Yeah, he was, because originally they tried Gabby Adini in Serie A and the UEFA Champions League. You know, if you lose Higuain, you lose one of the world's best strikers. You replace him with Milik, who starts brilliantly, scored twice at Dynamo Kiev in an excellent win on match day 1. Then he gets injured. There's going to be that hole. And Mertens filled it. He didn't actually start as many as he would have hoped, but he came off the bench. He directly contributed a remarkable amount of their goals. And I think Maurizio Sarri's Napoli have been growing since he took over at the start of the last campaign. And I think to go through as group winners is a huge progression for the club. It's just the second time in their history that they've been into the last 16, despite you think of Napoli as this, you know, one of the big boys of Italian football. Well, in this competition, the UEFA Champions League in particular, they haven't really ever had considerable success. So this is a chance, and it was a big test for them on match day 6 to go to Benfica. You know, they could have gone through on match day 3, Rob. So they had all of that. They missed out on match day 3, 4 and 5. Went into 6 with a bit of trepidation. Are we going to throw it all away? No, they came out with a really big performance in Portugal. And they might just be a team that Real Madrid didn't fancy drawing in the round of 16.
Absolutely. Paul, there was one other thing I want to talk about, and that was that final group game in Ukraine where Dynamo Kiev beat Besiktas 6-0. I remember reading quotes from the head coach, Serhii Rebrov, saying, "We're going to play for the pride of the country and we're not going to, even though we're out already, not give up." And they went and won 6-0. Just how did they do that?
Well, of course, it helped that Besiktas had two players sent off. Dynamo, the key results for them, as it was for Benfica, the fact that Benfica beat them home and away on match day 3-4, those double headers, which are so often decisive. And that kind of left Dinamo out of touch. But they've got a young team coming through and they showed what they could do. But probably it was more of a Besiktas collapse, I'd have to say, than a superb Dinamo performance.
It certainly was. A reminder, Benfica, Dortmund, Real Madrid, Napoli, the two ties that have come out of that group. We'll get onto that shortly. But we're going to go on to Group C now, which Barcelona won at a canter in truth, scoring plenty of goals in the process.
Short corner, Iniesta, Messi, all the way across, Suarez slides in, and that is seven.
But one match in Manchester showed that Barca were beatable.
Oh, they've equalised! It's Gundogan! A mistake at the back by Barcelona! It's Kevin De Bruyne looking at the ball and hitting it right-footed and scoring an absolute beauty! That's what he's capable of! Jesus Navas with the cross, Aguero, Gundogan! Yes for Manchester City! How they've turned this around! Manchester City 3, Barcelona 1!
Well, there was no doubt that was one of the most exciting nights of the group stage, Manchester City's home win over the Blaugrana. Here's how the group finished in the end. Barcelona with 15 points, only dropping points in that game. Manchester City 9 and finishing second. Gladbach into the UEFA Europa League with 5 points. Celtic bottom of the section with 3, despite many admirable performances from Brendan Rodgers' team. Paul, you were keen to flag up Lionel Messi at the start of the show, and I suppose his 10 goals so far has been one of the main reasons that Barca won that group easily.
Especially that hat-trick at home to Manchester City, which potential banana skin against Josep Guardiola's team. Of course, you don't know what Manchester City you're going to get. It could be the team that goes to Barcelona and loses 4-0, and it could have been what. Although, actually, in the first half, there were chances at both ends. Barcelona took control in the end of that match, but really, if Manchester City had been 3-2 up at half-time, it wouldn't have been a surprise the way that game went. And it was similar even in the return game, when again there were chances at both ends. Messi gave Barcelona the lead, but City had this ability, I mean, with De Bruyne, that's maybe not surprising, to come back and win. And then again, they had performances like they had against Celtic, where they somehow managed to draw, and they were probably lucky that Borussia Mönchengladbach were a long way away from their best. They'd have a lot of injuries, and that probably helped Manchester City through.
Yeah, they were Jekyll and Hyde, were Pep Guardiola's team. The one thing we heard there, Adam Summerton, I think, with the commentary, Gundogan was absolutely magnificent that evening in Manchester, and he's out. And I think he was becoming a very, very key player. Well, we know about Kevin De Bruyne and his importance, but Gundogan that night, you thought, wow, OK, this is the guy that is going to make Manchester City tick against the real big boys in the UEFA Champions League. And how they cope and how they replace him when they get, they will hope, to the round of 16, the quarterfinals, will be interesting because he'll be a huge miss.
And it certainly seems like Manchester City defensively are trying to work this out, Chris, because I'll even look at the goal difference between what Barcelona and City did. Plus 16 for Barcelona, plus 2 for Manchester City. That tells me they probably were conceding too many goals as well.
Well, they do. And they do it in the Premier League. They are trialling the new system. I think everyone is still getting to grips with that. And because of the way that Guardiola coaches his teams, it does sometimes take a little bit of time. It didn't at Barcelona because it was their natural way, and maybe at Bayern too, but it was always going to take a bit of time. But City are through, and remember, you know, it wasn't that long ago that we were talking about them being in the round of 16 for the first time. I think he realises that they are a work in progress despite all the, you know, financial clout that they have, and they finished behind a very, very good Barcelona who at times, I think, particularly in that game in Manchester, maybe they thought, you know what, we've probably won the group anyway. That's not to take away what City did that night. But maybe the game for me was in the Camp Nou, when there was everything at stake and Barcelona were very comfortable winners.
And we had that bizarre Claudio Bravo incident as well against his former club. An amazing game. But Emmanuel Abucci's tweeted in to say that City's 3-1 win over Barcelona was his highlight of the group stage, a sensational performance. Let's get on to the other two teams in the group. Borussia Mönchengladbach go into the UEFA Europa League, but it wasn't enough to save André Schubert, effectively. He has lost his job as head coach, and Dieter Hecking, formerly at Wolfsburg, has come in to replace him during the winter break. Paul, Celtic, in the UEFA Champions League group stage, they couldn't really have had much of a tougher group, but they had some memorable nights as well as they head out of Europe.
They did. Remember, they lost their opening game 7-0. But then the next game, they drew 3-0 with Manchester City. I think that game also showed the one real highlight for Celtic were the performances of Moussa Dembélé, who's had a very good season for them. They've got 2 goals against Manchester City. Of course, they also drew away against Manchester City on the final game as well.
And from Gladbach's point of view, I think, although Andreas Schubert lost his job, if you look back at the celebration after they drew with City to secure third place on match day 5, that said it all. Gladbach, from the moment the draw was made, was, OK, realistically, we're not going to finish first or second. Make sure we finish third. And they did.
OK, let's turn our attention now to Group D, where we were treated to 2 heavyweight encounters between leading title contenders.
Griezmann
helping it on. Another chance, this time for Carrasco across goal. And this time it hits the post and goes into the back of the net. And Yannick Carrasco has steered Atletico Madrid into a lead that they richly deserve. It is Atletico Madrid 1, Bayern Munich 0.
Will it be the right foot of Lewandowski, the left of Douglas Costa? It's Lewandowski. It's a wonderful goal. Right into the top left-hand corner. It's Bayern 1, Atletico 0.
So here's how Group D finished. Atletico top with 15 points. They'd secured top spot, remember, before they went to Munich in their final group game. Bayern 12 points, Rostov 5. They go into the UEFA Europa League, and PSV Eindhoven out of European competition altogether after finishing bottom. Chris, obviously people will look at the head-to-heads we just heard from there and think they were the key moments, but I wonder if that 3-2 loss for Bayern at Rostov was the key result in the group.
Yeah, quite possibly, because it denied us all the heavyweight encounter for top spot, that when the group stage draw was made in August and you thought, OK, Bayern Atletico at home, something will be on the table there. And it wasn't, because, you know, Rostov got their first ever win in the group stage. It was ultimately enough for them to finish third, massive achievement. And it meant that Atletico could go to Munich. They knew they'd already finished top. I still think those two games did tell us a lot. I think particularly for Atleti, was there going to be a hangover after another heartbreaking UEFA Champions League final defeat, their second in three seasons? The answer was no. As you heard there, they were brilliant on match day one. They were much better than Bayern. Okay, Carlo Ancelotti was still very new to the job in Munich, but Atletico put a really standout performance. And Bayern then, I think it was very important on match day six, despite the fact that nothing was at stake, if you like, that they put in a good performance, and they were worthy winners on match day six. So I'd still have both of those as contenders. And ultimately, both of those went through in a group which you would have expected, absolutely, them to have finished first and second.
I think what Bayern did in December, both beating Atletico and then, of course, that memorable league win against Leipzig, where they blew away the team that had been leading them in the Bundesliga, it does start to think that what Carlo Ancelotti has started to do is start to gel. Remember, Carlo Ancelotti himself said, I'm not trying to change things much from the way Pep Guardiola did it. He said it was working, but maybe the Pep Guardiola system usually involves being very intense all the way through the season, and sometimes it's seen his team slightly fade away at the end of the season, even if they've won the Bundesliga in March. So maybe Carlo Ancelotti is pacing his team better, because they've still got all the match winners they used to have. They've still got Neuer in goal. They've still got plenty, even if they had a couple of bad away results in this group.
Certainly. So Atletico winning that group, Bayern second. Rostov, Chris, finishing third finally. Of course, that first ever UEFA Champions League game against Bayern effectively got them that spot. And then they were resolute in Eindhoven in their final group game.
Yeah, went there, you know, almost ideal for the way Rostov have played. Of course, they had the rather odd situation in the summer. Kerben Bedeev looked like, well, he did leave, but then he was back in the coaching staff. And he loves, if there's anything better for Rostov, it's to go to somewhere and say, if you get a 0-0 draw, you'll be through. And they did, against a PSV side that never really looked like breaking them down. Huge achievement for them, and another blow for Dutch football, really, to not have PSV, their UEFA Champions League representative, even in the Europa League. It's not good for their coefficient again, but all credit to Rostov. A terrific achievement to finish third, again in a group where they were never going to finish in the top two.
OK, let's turn our attention to Group E now. A reminder of how this one finished, and it is the group that included Tottenham finishing third. Monaco 11 points, Bayer Leverkusen 10, Spurs 7, and CSKA Moskva finishing bottom of the group with 3 points in the end. Let's talk about Monaco first, Paul, because they really set out that early marker of how good they are currently, and we've seen how good they are with their position in the Ligue 1 table with that 2-1 victory at Tottenham. How impressed were you by that result?
Well, that was clearly a decisive result in the group. Obviously, Tottenham having to play at Wembley, maybe not ideal for them.
Do you think it was a factor, ultimately, that they weren't at White Hart Lane and the atmosphere can be so intense inside that stadium?
I think if you compare the performances they've continued to have at White Hart Lane in the league, then probably yes. I think the main thing was, though, that they did maybe underestimate Monaco. I don't think anyone expected Monaco to be quite as good this season, especially in the attacking sense, as they have been. And they blew Tottenham away. It was two quite early goals, and Tottenham were always playing catch-up after that, and they did nearly catch up. But the fact that Monaco have been so positive, and that's what we've seen in Ligue 1 as well, and they're prepared to accept the odd reverse, but they've been very exciting to watch, and a team that are prepared to take the game to their opponents, and that really rocked Tottenham back on unfamiliar turf.
Yeah, it did. And you look at the two goal scorers, Thomas Lemar and Bernardo Silva, are two of the most exciting young talents in world football, and they're both playing for Monaco. And they were very defensive 2 years ago under Leonardo Jardim, who reached the quarterfinals. You know, they blunted some of the best attacks in European football. Well, he's now got them playing a brand of really good attacking football, and I think they are a dark horse and a team to watch.
I think also what might frustrate Spurs a little bit is that Bayer Leverkusen pipped them to second, and they haven't been at their best this season, Chris. Javier Hernandez hasn't quite been scoring as he did last term. Leverkusen finishing with 10, and they also won at Wembley.
They did, which was another of the major results. And if any side loses their opening two home games in a group stage, I don't know the stats, but I doubt many have made it through. You're just giving yourself such a hard task. It was a huge win, that, for Leverkusen, but you're right. I mean, you know, I think seven Bundesliga coaches lost their job in the first half of the campaign, and, you know, Roger Schmidt would have been under a lot more pressure given where they are in the table had they not had this excellent run. They're through in what always looked like a very tight competitive group, and so it turned out. Tottenham will be disappointed, but equally, Leverkusen will be absolutely delighted.
By the way, Cisco finishing bottom of that group. They did collect 3 points overall, but Leonid Slutsky has left as head coach. Effectively, that game at Wembley, that defeat to Spurs on match day six, was his final game in charge. Next to Group F, where durable Dortmund shared 4 goals with the UEFA Champions League holders on 2 occasions.
Cross towards Aubameyang, he went for the spectacular, he went to Schürrle, and he's found the spectacular! Into the top corner, with 3.5 minutes to go, Dortmund are level again!
Aubameyang taking on Sergio Ramos, delivers into the middle, equalising goal! Marco Reus has got the touch, Dortmund are back from two behind to level it! And they're going through as group winners as it stands, incredible comeback! Field counter-attack in the final 4 minutes to square it. Real Madrid 2, Borussia Dortmund 2.
Well, as our commentator Phil Blacker was explaining there, that was decisive, that comeback for Borussia Dortmund at the Bernabeu. Dortmund finishing top with 14 points, Real Madrid second with 12, Legia squeezing into the UEFA Europa League, which we'll get onto in a moment, and Sporting out of Europe. Dortmund have shown a resilience, Paul, I think it'd be fair to say. Sixth in the Bundesliga this season, not pushing Bayern like they did last term. But in European competition, despite all the young players, that they've really come into their own.
Well, it reminds me of a few years ago when they reached the final. Of course, that was another season when they didn't perform to their absolute peak in the Bundesliga, having won it a couple of times in a row. They concentrated more on the UEFA Champions League, and they're rewarded in that competition by getting to the final game within a minute of taking the final to extra time. This time under Thomas Tuchel, again, it's a team that has a lot of familiarity from that team under Jurgen Klopp. They're always exciting to watch. They're always looking to press. And, of course, to come back at the Bernabeu to draw and top the group and aid their chances in the round of 16, it was impressive and it was deserved. You can never write this team off. Broke the record number of goals scored in the group stage. They're a team to watch. They got the goals and they've got a lot of exciting players. Still, some of the players from the past, like Reus, and, of course, Aubameyang, who is top scorer in the Bundesliga and has just been fantastic throughout the year.
He has been, and he'll be back from the African Cup of Nations as well for the round of 16, which we'll get onto shortly. Let's read out some of your highlights from this group. Some of you brought up there, Paul. Wayne Rwanda says Dortmund breaking the group stage goal-scoring record was his highlight. 21 goals for Borussia Dortmund in the end. Alenia Physic says that last-minute goal for Real Madrid in the Sporting game, that winner effectively in that home game at the Bernabeu, was one of their standout moments. Let's go on to Real Madrid, Chris. They are the holders, having won it last summer. What shape do you think they're in, despite the fact they finished second in this group?
Well, you'd have to say very good, although this is the slightly odd thing about Real Madrid is that everyone keeps on saying, oh, this isn't a vintage Real Madrid side, yet they're currently on a club record and maybe Spanish record, potentially pretty soon, unbeaten run, top ahead of Barcelona and Atletico and Sevilla. In this competition, they went through unbeaten, along with Dortmund. Only 6 teams in the whole competition went through the group stage without losing a game. So on paper, they look to be the real deal, as they aim to be the first ever side to retain their UEFA Champions League trophy. I'm still not convinced in this competition. I think in both of their home games against Sporting on match day one, they were bailed out by 2 late goals, but Sporting were the better side. And I think on match day six, yes, when you look back at it, you think, wow, Dortmund did well to come from 2-0 down. I think they were the better side for the 90 minutes. They found themselves 2 down, but at the end of the game, you thought they maybe deserved to win that. So still work to do, and they're through, not as the group winners. But what we did get is 2 belting games between those two, the 2 big sides in that group. You always hope that's going to be the case, and it certainly was in Group F.
Cristiano Ronaldo, who, I mean, he had a spectacular 2016, has won every award you could possibly win. But actually, in the group stage, he didn't have that great time. Of course, he got that late equaliser against Sporting, which then turned into a victory. But He actually had the most shots off target of anyone in the whole of the group stage. And when you compare the fact he only got a couple of goals and Messi got 10, Messi catching up, there's only two goals between them in the all-time list now. And I think that's been the cause for them this season. Even when they've not been performing well, they've still got results and they've still been the best team in the league and they've still got through their group and will have what they feel will be a winnable round of 16 tie despite not being seeded. So I suppose it's worked out. And of course, really what counts in this competition is what happened in those games in April or May, and they could hit form then and that would be a problem for everybody else.
Yeah, and they have two centre-forwards now in Benzema and Morata, who's come into his own. Another highlight, this one from Kalmar Rambir, says when Cristiano Ronaldo returned to his first club, of course Ronaldo going back to Sporting, and then Kalmar's included that, you know, that emoji with the two heart eyes in the tweet. So that was another notable moment at the group stage. But finally, let's talk about Legia, Chris. They just went for it at the end of the group stage and it got them into the UEFA Europa League. I suppose that 8-4 game with Dortmund, the most we've ever seen in a UEFA Champions League game, 12 goals, was one of the most bizarre of the whole competition so far.
It was bonkers. Every time we were both working that night here and you looked up and, oh, there's another goal. There's another goal. It was absolutely, it was mad. But that was the way that Legia played. They started off being thumped at home by Dortmund, conceding 6 goals. This is their first group stage campaign since 95-96, I believe. Long, long time. They lost their first 3. They conceded 13 goals. And somewhere along the line, they said, you know what? Let's just attack and see what happens. They scored 3 on match day 4 against Real Madrid, 3-3 draw. You know, yeah, they conceded 8. They still scored 4 goals at Borussia Dortmund, which I think everyone forgot about because they conceded 8. And then they went into match day 6, knowing a win would see them pip Sporting.
Kept a clean sheet.
they're almost the team of the tournament so far. They were brilliantly entertaining and with a goal difference of minus 15.
That is amazing, isn't it? Only 5 of the group stage winners, by the way, scored more goals than Legia, yet the Polish side still finished with that bizarre goal difference. A brilliant game, that 8-4 between Legia and Dortmund. Unforgettable as well. Legia into the UEFA Europa League. Thank you for all your memorable moments so far. Let's go to Group G now. Newcomers Leicester City found the form that had been missing so far this season in the English Premier League.
Good ball in, 1-0, it's Slimani, the Dragon Slayer is at it again against Porto. Lovely ball in from Mahrez. Slimani this time made no mistake with the free header from close range, and it is Leicester 1, Porto 0.
I suppose, Paul, when this group was drawn, Leicester winning it with 13 points, Porto second with 11, Copenhagen 9 and Club Brugge out of Europe. It looked like quite an even group for Leicester City to go in. It probably gave them hope that they could finish in one of those top 2 spots.
Of course, they benefited from the recently changed rule. Second season, they've had the rule that the champions of the top nations get automatic seeding, because otherwise, of course, they wouldn't really have had a European coefficient because they haven't been in for so long. So instead of being in pot 4, they were in pot 1. They drew Porto from pot 2, who probably weren't necessarily the strongest team from that pot. They just made that spectacular start, considering how poorly they started in the Premier League, to win their first 3 UEFA Champions League games without conceding. And even if it's not against 3 of the big guns, it's still against 3 teams in Porto, Brugge, Copenhagen, who have plenty of European experience in their ranks and as a club, and they weren't going to be caught after that. That basically made sure they could go through it, made sure they could almost ease over the line and still win the group. So well done to them. And we saw performances from people like Mahrez, who hasn't necessarily in the Premier League produced the performance that he did when Leicester had that unbelievable Premier League win. I mean, we're still 6 months or however long on. It's hard to get a perspective on what they did, one of the great upsets in all sports ever. And they've had to go into this competition without maybe the key player in that victory, N'Golo Kanté, went to Chelsea. But at least in the UEFA Champions League so far, with the exception of that one game against Porto at the end when they were already through, Leicester City did look like that team that won the Premier League.
Yeah, they look like a side who were just out to enjoy themselves from top to bottom, the supporters right through to the players and Claudio Ranieri. And I think that was the way they had to come into this group stage. And they were fantastic. And we heard the commentary there, Slimani's goal. That, for me, was the key result, because Leicester had gone to Bruges and beaten Club Brugge on match day 1. You thought, great start. Can they beat Porto? And if they do, they'll be on 6 points and they'll be halfway through. And then they'll really start to believe. And they did. And Slimani, having scored so many goals against Porto for Sporting, came up with a big goal from a wonderful Mahrez assist. And they just thoroughly enjoyed their European adventure, which is not all clubs do. Some of them, as English champions, would be, OK, we're still a big fish. But no, they went out, they enjoyed themselves, and they thoroughly deserved to go through. I do feel a little sorry for Copenhagen in this group. They went out with 9 points, which would be enough in a couple of the other sections to have gone through. They only conceded 2 goals. And ultimately, perhaps because of Leicester's performance on match day six, when they needed a favour from Claudio Ranieri's team, but they were beaten heavily. They ended up going out the Danish champions.
They certainly did. And they had the joint best defensive record in the group stage with Atletico and Juve, conceding just two goals, but they still only finished third, Club Brugge, out of European competition after six defeats. OK, let's move on. Almost the biggest news from Group H is that for the first time since 2013, Sevilla will not be UEFA Europa League champions. They progressed to the UEFA Champions League round of 16, but Juventus proved the strongest team in the pool.
Mario Mandzukic curling it inside the post, and that does the job for Juventus. They are heading into the knockout round of the UEFA Champions League for the fourth season in the last five. Mario Mandzukic, curled right foot effort in off the post, has made it Sevilla 1, Juventus 3.
So it finished for Juventus on 14 points, Sevilla 11, Lyon 8, and they're out of the UEFA Champions League. They're going to the UEFA Europa League now. Dinamo Zagreb finished bottom of the group with 0 points. I suppose for Sevilla, Paul, there was earlier points where they could have wrapped this up, and it was really nervy going into match day six.
Well, absolutely. I mean, after four games, they seemed all but through. And even in that, during that Juventus game, they actually took the lead. Then they had a player sent off in that first half, and that combined as Juve scoring right before half-time. That really turned the game, and Juventus were able to go on and win, and Sevilla had to cling on a little bit, even at Lyon, just to get that point they needed to get through and to end their UEFA Europa League reign. As they mentioned, I mean, there was some excitement in watching them play on occasions, but they've been a bit up and down. Of course, they lost their coach to Paris in the summer. They've had to regroup in that sense, and I don't know if we've quite seen the peak Sevilla yet that they have potential to show.
I think it was just vital that they got through. You know, you mentioned there about winning the last three UEFA Europa Leagues. 7 years since they've been to the round of 16, and they were definitely one of the two best teams in this section. And actually, they went to Lyon, I think, knowing as long as they didn't lose by two, they'd be through. And I thought it was actually quite a professional performance on match day six from Jorge Sampaoli's side, who we've seen free scoring. And actually, they kept a very diligent clean sheet on a night when Lyon were throwing everything at them. And I just wonder whether they might be quietly confident of doing something in this competition, Sevilla. I think they have the firepower, Ben Yedder's scoring, and they look a really serious side. And what that does mean is how well Juventus played. Again, they went through the section unbeaten and they topped the group, and they didn't have it all their own way, but they found a way, and that's what champion teams do.
Hume just tweeted in to say that the Bonucci goal at Sevilla for Juventus was one of his standout moments of the group stage. What did you make to Juve and the way that they were performing overall?
Maybe they didn't power through the group, but they won it. They had that comeback at Sevilla when things could have gone a little wrong on that occasion when they were behind, but they kept their heads. And of course, to get that equaliser they did through Marchisio, it was a penalty, kept his nerve. They powered on in the second half and went and won it. And Juve haven't always shown their best in UEFA Champions League in recent years compared to Serie A, where they've been supreme. Of course, they did get to the final a couple of years ago. That was a bit of a one-off. But it'd be interesting if they can start to really produce performances.
So Juve and Sevilla from Group H, we've been reading out some of your highlights of the group stage. Gents, from all the groups, what's been your best moment so far?
My best moment was that Marco Reus equaliser on match day six. A guy who has been out injured for such a long time. You know, he missed the UEFA European Championships. He missed the whole of the season, basically, up until match day six. And for him to score in a fabulous comeback from Thomas Tuchel's side, it was a great moment. It was a record-breaking one. And if Marco Reus is fit and firing, Borussia Dortmund have a real chance of winning this season's competition.
I'm going to pick another comeback to draw. It's the way Besiktas came back against Benfica. It didn't save their campaign in the end, though at the time it looked like it had done. To be 3-0 down, which has happened very rarely in the history of the UEFA Champions League, it looked totally hopeless for them. It looked like Benfica could go on and score as many goals as they wanted to. But to get a point in that atmosphere in Istanbul, it's a night they'll all remember, even if it then went wrong for them in Kiev.
OK, let's look at the top scorers then at the moment in the UEFA Champions League. So Lionel Messi is way out on 10. Then Edison Cavani with his heroics for Paris Saint-Germain on 6. Lewandowski 5. And then there's a group of players on 4, including the likes of Aubameyang, Dries Mertens, Mesut Ozil and Karim Benzema. But Chris, is anyone going to catch Messi? Is he already too far in terms of topping the goal-scoring ranks?
Yeah, I think he is. It's probably a question whether it can be a record-breaking year. He only played 5 matches. He's averaging 2 goals a game. He looks back to his very, very best. And maybe as standout a fact is the fact that Cristiano Ronaldo isn't on that list. He's not even amongst the, you know, the top however many 10 goal scorers it is, given how many goals he's scored recently.
And of course, as we mentioned before, Ronaldo actually had the most shots off target of anyone in the group stage, which suggests it wasn't that he wasn't getting chances. It's just that when he got chances, okay, he had a lot of cracks from outside the box, which maybe were low percentage shots, but nevertheless, it just, the ball weren't going in for him. Unlike in the last couple of group stages where he was breaking all sorts of records. So it doesn't mean he won't start firing them in now we get to the knockout stage. But I think we can be pretty confident Messi will continue to do so. And we can probably be pretty confident that Neymar, who had the most assists on 7, will continue to set up goals as well. And that's without even without talking about Luis Suarez.
Yeah, some really notable stats from the whole of the group stage. Sergio Rico, by the way, the Sevilla goalkeeper, kept 5 clean sheets. And overall, there were 6 teams that went unbeaten through the whole group stage. Arsenal, Leverkusen were one of those, Dortmund, Juve, Paris Saint-Germain and Real Madrid. OK, a detailed preview of the round of 16 to come in a few minutes. But next, news of UEFA.com's Team of the Year for 2016.
Dizemos não ao racismo.
Nein zum Rassismus.
Nein til Rassismo.
Non au racisme.
Nein til Rassismo.
Não ao racismo.
Cristiano Ronaldo, Manuel Neuer, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, Vincent Kompany, Caroline Sagar and Lionel Messi are just a few of the European football stars saying no to racism. European football united against racism. Respect.
You're listening to UEFA Champions League Match Day Live.
This is a Match Day Live podcast special. I'm Rob Daly, and next on the agenda is the Team of the Year for 2016. UEFA.com asks you to vote on which players should be selected for the 11 from a shortlist of 40 names overall. Here's Andrew Kotcher with news of who made the cut.
Over 7 million people had their say, and after a wonderful year for both club and country, there was a clear winner when it came to the goalkeeper.
And here's Nabil Fekir, Juve on the back foot, Buffon with an unbelievable save.
Gianluigi Buffon beat Jan Oblak, Rui Patricio and Keylor Navas to the shirt, and he's not the only Juventus representative in the side. His club and international teammate Leonardo Bonucci is one of 4 defenders in a 4-3-3 formation, along with Jerome Boateng, Gerard Piqué and Real Madrid's captain Fantastic.
And it's Sergio Ramos, the scourge of Athletic in 2014, the man who got that late equaliser. He's got the opener in the 2016 UEFA Champions League final.
Sergio Ramos got over 450,000 votes, more than anybody else. And he's one of 4 Madrid players in the team. Luka Modric and Toni Kroos are also in the side, with another pass master completing the midfield.
Slammed in like an absolute rocket from Iniesta. That is a wonderful goal.
Andreas Iniesta has been selected for the 6th time, a new record for his position. When it comes to the forwards, there was stiff competition. The likes of Luis Suarez and Robert Lewandowski narrowly missed out, but there was a place for Atletico's main man.
Griezmann with a charge! Griezmann scores the away goal! Atletico Madrid on the counter-attack! Brilliant! First-time football finished off by the finisher supreme!
Griezmann also starred at UEFA Euro 2016, finishing as the competition's top scorer. And the Frenchman is joined in the forward line by a couple of familiar faces.
Cristiano Ronaldo scores the winning penalty for Real Madrid. It's their day yet again.
Squares it for Messi on the hat-trick. 3-0. Messi's done it again. The records continue to tumble.
It's the 3rd year in a row that both Ronaldo and Messi have been chosen for the Team of the Year. For the 10th year running, UEFA has set aside €100,000 for the International Committee of the Red Cross, which will be handed over by one of the final 11 at a UEFA Champions League match in February.
Andrew Kotcher with the team there, so those 11 names once more. Buffon in goal, Boateng, Bonucci, Ramos and Piqué at the back. Kroos, Modric and Iniesta, the 3 midfielders, and Messi, Griezmann and Ronaldo, the attack. A good team. I think they might win a few things if they were actually allowed to play together. But Paul Saffa, Buffon, was he the right goalkeeper for you? It was a very tough category.
You can see how tough the nominees were from who missed out, which, of course, Manuel Neuer, which raised a few eyebrows at the time. Only had four nominees. You've got Jan Oblak. You've got Keylor Navas, the man I voted for his fantastic performances for Real Madrid. And you've also got Rui Patricio as well. What a performance to win UEFA Euro 2016 with Portugal. That display in the final, maybe the individual performance of the whole European Championships. But Buffon, I mean, we didn't really mention him in talking about what Juve did in the group stage, but he pulled off some tremendous saves. We'll be discussing him more when we come to discuss their tie against Porto because of who he's up against then. But it's a tough run, but I suppose you could say he's the man that is on top of the goalkeeping tree, and it's up to someone else to really, really, really perform brilliantly to knock him off. And for him to still be doing that is amazing.
Yeah, I think it was a year, including in the UEFA Champions League final and definitely at the UEFA European Championships in France, when defending was key. It was quite a defensive competition, that, and I think therefore the defenders, there was an awful lot of good ones that missed out. No place for Diego Godin, no place for Pepe, who won Euro and the UEFA Champions League and wasn't in the team. But then again, Boateng, Bonucci, Ramos and Piqué are pretty strong. So I think the defenders and the goalkeepers, because of 2016, were particularly strong this calendar year.
And on to midfield, Paul, it was an all-Spanish league midfield as well.
It was indeed with Modric, Iniesta, who was also no doubt picked for what he did at UEFA Euro again with Spain. We had some great performances, and Toni Kroos, hard to argue with. I think it shows the depth of choice, which I think there'll be a lot of people saying that. My three choices that I picked were N'Golo Kante, who, I mean, didn't do anything in UEFA competition, didn't play in UEFA competition apart from in the Euros for France, but what a display for Leicester. He was, for me, the big reason why they won the Premier League, that great performance. Kevin De Bruyne as well, and Dimitri Payet, who had a fantastic UEFA Euro. Again, there were just so many candidates in midfield, although you can't argue with the quality of Toni Kroos, Luka Modric and Andres Iniesta.
Same with the forwards, though, Rob. And also, I wonder whether it depends when you voted. Was it at the start in November, or was it at the back end of the start of January? Because someone like Lionel Messi might not... He wasn't in my three when I picked my team, because I went with Griezmann. I thought he was fantastic. But then actually, had I voted in early January, I may well have picked Lionel Messi. As we mentioned, how many goals did he score in the group stage? Scored a lot more. And spare a thought for Luis Suarez. He's still never been in the final 11. He scored 47 goals in 2016 and no place.
Unfortunate, Luis Suarez, but maybe next year, depending on what Barcelona do as well. OK, next on the podcast, we'll look ahead to the round of 16 in the UEFA Champions League. We're going to hear from Andre Silva, Jose Callejon and Pep Guardiola.
You're listening to UEFA Champions League Match Day Live.
This is Rob Daly on a special Match Day Live podcast. UEFA.com's Paul Saffa and Chris Parrott are alongside me. And it's time to preview the eight massive ties in the round of 16, which, of course, you can listen to on UEFA Champions League Match Day Live. Just go to UEFA.com or the official UEFA Champions League app every match night and listen to our radio coverage. And what a matchup to kick things off on the first night of the knockout stages. It's Paris Saint-Germain against Barcelona again. They've played six times in the UEFA Champions League since 2013, including two quarter-final ties.
Messi tries to get involved really for the first time and plays a lovely ball through for Villa. Takes the touch, it's and a goal, it's an in by Pedro, and Barcelona back in front in the tie. And the camp now collectively breathes a huge sigh of relief. And again, they're heading through as it stands.
Still going, Dani Alves. Now with a cross, and there's space, and it's 2-0. It's Neymar's second of the night. It is 2-0 Barcelona on the night, 5-1 on aggregate.
So Barcelona have generally had the better of things against Paris Saint-Germain, including the UEFA Cup winners' cup win against them in the final back in 1997. Paul Saffa, how do you see this tie? Are Barcelona the favourites going into it?
I think so. They've certainly shown the better form in this competition. I think Paris, under Unai Emery, haven't necessarily hit the heights. Of course, Zlatan Ibrahimovic leading, he was going to be a big thing to replace. Of course, Edinson Cavani has scored plenty of goals, missed many more, but at least he's still taken a lot of chances. He's still also been the man that's shown he can ring out chances, but they'll need to be clinical against Barcelona because I don't think he's going to be able to afford to make as many misses as he did in the group stage. They've signed Julian Draxler, of course, who happily for them, hasn't been playing in the UEFA Champions League, so they can add him to the squad if they want. That should add some quality. But they have lost four games in Ligue 1 before the winter break, which isn't ideal for them. They've not been as dominant in France as they have done in the past, and they've not really looked as strong as they have in recent years, when even then they've only been maybe that level below really challenging one of the big teams, with Barcelona undoubtedly are, particularly when Messi is firing, not to mention Suarez and Neymar.
Yeah, they've been punished for not winning their section. I know Arsenal ended up drawing Bayern, but as soon as you don't win the section, you open yourself up to drawing a Barcelona, which they did. They don't look as strong this season. And I just wonder, if you ask the question, are Paris Saint-Germain closer to winning the UEFA Champions League than they were 12 months ago when we were having this same chat? I think the answer is no. I think they're further away. Unai Emery hopefully will have plenty of time to turn that around, not just this season, over a number of years. But they were thumped in 2015, weren't they? 5-1 on aggregate. It was a lot closer in 2013 against Barcelona when they went out on away goals. I think Barcelona are a huge favourite, and Paris Saint-Germain at home at the Parc des Princes are going to have to definitely not lose the game, probably win it, and maybe not concede an away goal.
Lots of you have been tweeting in about who you think is going to win the UEFA Champions League, and many of our listeners are going for Barcelona. Abdul Melek says Barca for sure, with Messi in top form. Someone also points out that Barca aren't going great in Spain at the moment, so they'll desperately try and win the UEFA Champions League this season. Chris, I know you've seen a bit of Barcelona of late. Are they at their free-flowing best?
No, they're not, which is one of the reasons that they're trailing Real Madrid. What they do always have, when they're fit anyway, is that front three of Messi, Suarez and Neymar. They have to try and find a way. I don't know, I mean, it's been interesting. Ivan Rakitic has been absolutely key to them. You know, ever since Xavi went, Rakitic has been brilliant. He hasn't been playing, he's been on the bench recently, so there has been a switch. Gomez has been given an opportunity. I don't think they're quite as fluid in midfield. And I think teams now realise that if you just sit back, Barcelona will pick you off at some stage. Their weakness is defensively. They still haven't replaced Dani Alves at right back. Sergio Roberto is a brilliant footballer, fantastic midfielder. Is he a natural right back? I'm not sure. So you can get at Barcelona, you can attack them. And what they are going to need is their big players, their forward-thinking players. Paul's mentioned Draxler, Di Maria and Cavani to be on their A game. And if they are, they've definitely got a chance.
And we did see one example of that, of course, was Manchester City. Not only in the home game where Manchester City kept taking the game to Barcelona after they fell behind and were able to win, but even in the game in the Camp Nou, OK, they lost 4-0. What they did do in the first half, when they were almost not worrying about not conceding but just trying to outscore them, though it didn't quite fall for them, they created chances, and we know how much attacking talent. Chris just listed them there. If Paris can take the game to Barcelona, take the chance. They have to be clinical, but they are beatable for them, even though Paris are clearly outsiders.
OK, guys, so for each tie, by the way, I don't know if we've warned you about this, but you have to pick a winner from every tie. So I'm going to get your quarter-final lineup, effectively. So, Paul, do you want to go first? And then, Chris, you go next. Winner of Paris Saint-Germain, Barcelona.
Well, I said Paris are outsiders, so Barcelona.
Barcelona. And you, Rob?
Barcelona, yeah. Barcelona probably to go through against Paris Saint-Germain. Let's see what they can do in that tie. OK, next up, Benfica against Borussia Dortmund. That's the other tie that night in the UEFA Champions League. It's the first meeting of these clubs since the 1960s. So really, for me, Chris, this is one of the ties I'm excited about because it feels like a real fresh UEFA Champions League tie, one we haven't seen in a while.
Yeah, not since Eusebio was playing. And Borussia Dortmund came out on top. And given how often they've been in the European Cup in the, you know, almost 50 years since then, it is a surprise that they've never bumped into each other. Benfica, quarterfinals last season, lost to a German side in Bayern. I think Dortmund are favourites. They've, of course, been to Lisbon already and beat Sporting. I'm fascinated to see how Dortmund go because they just have this plethora of young superstars, whether it be Pulisic or Dembele or Moore. And then if they have Royce fit as well, I don't exactly know how he's going to rotate that. Does Tuchel absolutely know his best team yet? Perhaps performances in the Bundesliga might suggest not, but they are totally fearless. I think they're favourites for this tie. Does that impact them? I think it could be really interesting. And some of it might depend. We're recording this at the start of January. Victor Lindelof has been a massive player for Benfica. He is heavily linked with a move away. If they can keep hold of him, I think they'll have a better chance of nullifying that Dortmund attack. If he were to go, they would leave a hole.
It's interesting you mentioned their win at Sporting because they'd not actually ever won in Portugal, Dortmund, before this year. during all those years under Jurgen Klopp. They've actually won twice because they beat Porto as well away in the UEFA Europa League earlier last season. So they've started to win in Portugal. Of course, they scored, as we mentioned earlier, the record number of goals in the group stage, though realistically Benfica, we know, defend an awful lot better than Legia Warsaw. Then again, Benfica are probably the team of all the teams that went through, maybe, probably you would rank 16th out of all the teams that went through. They got a bit of luck through Besiktas blowing up in Dinamo, which allowed Benfica, after Benfica themselves have thrown away that lead in Turkey. And the only thing I could say for Benfica is when they've been put in these round of 16 situations before, they've generally done quite well. I mean, and Dortmund are far from the strongest of the group winners they could have drawn. So Benfica will be relatively happy. Whether you can say they can hang on to Lindelof, they can sort of be informed by the time it comes to February. They're the team, like Paris in the last game, you need everything to go for them and all of them to get through.
I just wonder, with Dortmund outside the title running really in Germany, they'll be confident they can finish top four. Whether their main focus will become trying to progress as far as they can in the UEFA Champions League. A reminder, when those games are played on February the 14th, Paris Saint-Germain against Barcelona will be our featured game. We'll have updates from Benfica Dortmund, and of course we'll be across it when the two sides meet again on Wednesday the 8th of March. OK, who's going through from this tie? Chris, you first.
Dortmund's comfortably.
I don't always agree, but I'm going to say Dortmund's.
OK, it's pretty clear cut so far. Let's see if things can get a little bit more interesting as we turn our attention to Wednesday the 15th of February. We'll talk about the holders Real Madrid in a moment, but first a Bayern against Arsenal. They face each other in the round of 16 for the third time in five seasons, with Bayern winning in both 2013 and 2014. And the clubs had a home victory apiece when meeting in only last season's group stage. Chris, this is becoming a familiar story, and it's in fact 10 times previously they've met since the turn of the century.
Yeah, and Arsene Wenger's been there for Arsenal every time, and Bayern have had about four or five different coaches, but they've pretty much always come out on top. Groundhog Day. Before the draw, remember, Bayern tweeted a short video of Frank Ribery coming out of a helicopter saying, "Shall we just book our transport to London now?" and everyone knew. When the ball came out and it said Bayern, you thought, well, it's going to be Arsenal. And it was. So they win their group for the first time in a while, Arsenal, and they still bump into Bayern. When the draw was made, I thought this might be Arsenal's best opportunity. You know, if we're talking about those round of 16 ties in particular, to get one over Bayern. Since then, I think Carlo Ancelotti has begun to really get Bayern moving. Paul mentioned the win against Leipzig at the back end. Arsenal, first and foremost, they're going to have to believe that they can win this tie. They've been very frustratingly inconsistent again in England, coming back on a number of occasions. If they continue to give, or if they give Bayern a lead like they have done in the Premier League and the FA Cup even recently, they'll be blown away once more, I'm sure.
If there is hope for Arsenal, of course, for once having won their group, they do get to have the home leg second, and they're Achilles heel. They've lost six times in a row in a round of 16. And the last five occasions, it's because they've messed up the home leg and it's been too late to turn it around in the away leg. At least this time they go to, admittedly, a place they lost 5-1 last season in the group stage. So that's not ideal. But I think Arsenal, though they've not been as okay, they've been still been inconsistent, but I think they've shown a bit of a steel this season. And again, they're another of the underdogs that will need everyone to perform. They'll need Giroud to start showing the form he's been showing recently in the Premier League. We need Alexis Sanchez. He'll need to really be performing to his peak, and Mesut Ozil maybe as well. They've got opportunities. As you say, it probably is their best opportunity. It's just the question about whether Bayern, once they really get going after the winter break, if they can keep showing what they showed against Leipzig, and indeed when they beat Atletico as well, then realistically that level is probably too high for Arsenal to catch.
The argument against Arsenal has always been, do they have a bit of a milky centre? Are they a bit soft when it comes to really, you know, the very, very top teams? They're definitely improved at the back with Skoda Mustafi signing in the summer. I think people thought that Granit Xhaka in midfield was going to be the man. You know, I think recently he has slightly been found out. He is, of course, both those players know all about German football. Mustafi's an international and Xhaka played for a long time in the Bundesliga. So they've definitely improved in those two positions. But as I said, I just wonder whether Bayern are, having not been at their best in the opening half of the season, whether they're getting better and better, and they still have that man, Robert Lewandowski. We've not even talked about him. In any other era, even the goals he scored in 2016, when supposedly he wasn't at his best, would still be fantastic. But You know, if Bayern create chances, he tends to take them. And I think they will create enough chances to beat Arsenal.
Well, the players have already been tweeting about this game well in advance of kickoff itself. Philipp Lahm, of course, Bayern captain these days, says it's a tough draw as Arsenal are in really good shape. Looking forward to seeing to some of my former colleagues from the national team again. One of those, Mustafi, who's in his first season at the London club, of course, said, "They've already told me we always play Bayern in the UEFA Champions League." He's absolutely right. Of course, Özil in the ranks and Mertesacker as well. Arsenal in the knockout stages for the 17th consecutive season. Some of you have tweeted in about who you think is going to win the UEFA Champions League and varying opinions on this here. Michael Zeman says three times in the semi-final for Bayern, so it's time to reach the final and bring the trophy back to Munich. Cekic says Arsenal because of their strong squad and because Wenger won't have too many more opportunities to win the UEFA Champions League itself. OK, Thiago, by the way, should be fit for the round of 16. According to Carlo Ancelotti, the Spanish midfielder's had a thigh injury, but in their mid-season training in Qatar, Ancelotti says Thiago should be OK. Who's going through from this one?
Well, if Thiago is fit and can play as well as he played against Leipzig, it's going to be Bayern. I probably am going with Bayern. I'm wondering if we're going to see more consensus here.
Yeah, last fell at this stage in 2011, and I don't think 2017 is going to see Bayern tumble out in the last 16.
OK. Starting on the same night of that tie is Real Madrid and Napoli meeting each other. And forward Jose Callejon says there's a great desire to succeed in the Napoli ranks.
We're hungry to go far. We're developing as a side. We have some very young players, mixed with some that have more experience. We want to keep playing well and to try to go as far as possible.
Callejon playing his former club, of course, as Real Madrid take on Napoli. I like this as well from Arkadiusz Milik, the Napoli striker. You play football for moments like this, he says. A big challenge ahead. We are waiting for Real Madrid. And Chris, Milik has been injured, as we've already mentioned on the podcast. How's he shaping up to potentially make that round of 16 tie?
Well, if you believe the reports in Italy, he should be fine because Maurizio Sarri, remember, he injured his ACL, which is the injury that every footballer dreads. But apparently his comeback has been astonishing. They think that he could be in the matchday squad in the next couple of weeks, which would give him a fair amount of time to be ready for the round of 16. They will definitely have to ease him in, you know, very carefully. But I would think that, as always, from the moment he was out, that round of 16, if Napoli got there, was the moment Milik wanted to be back for. And this is why he signed. This is why he left Ajax to go to Napoli in the summer. And having him fit would be huge. Because I mentioned about Barcelona potentially at the back looking a little vulnerable. Napoli's strength is in their forward play. We've seen them score a lot of goals. And if they can have Milik fit, they will fancy their chances. Particularly, as we've said, having seen how Real Madrid played at home in the Bernabeu in the group stage against Sporting and Dortmund, I'm sure they will be watching those games back and they'll say, look, we can get at Real Madrid and we can get something.
These two sides last met in 1987 in the European Cup first round, a 2-0 win at home for Real Madrid before a 1-1 draw in Italy. Some of you have been tweeting in to say you do believe that Real Madrid will defend their title. Rabin says they will win the title again because they've been playing great football. Manik says they have an unbeatable squad. BBC, amazing midfielders and defenders, great squad depth, and Zizou. And then we've got Sergio Ramos as well. It does make a daunting task for Napoli, surely, Paul.
It certainly does. Funny you mentioned that game back in the late 80s in the sort of Maradona-era Napoli, because that was actually the game when they went out in the first round that started people thinking about maybe we need a group stage instead of it being knockout straight away. Give the big teams a few more games, then we'll really see who the real European champions are. So that was a huge game in the history of the competition. Now here we are, up to date now, we're in the knockouts again. And Madrid, without being brilliant, as a point we made earlier, they've been very, very difficult to beat this season, even without Ronaldo really firing and scoring loads of goals, particularly in this competition. They've still got through. They didn't win the group, of course. They allowed Dortmund twice to come from behind and draw with them. That'll give hope to Napoli. In fact, there it does seem to be a vulnerability, even to a team that's as apparently unbeatable as Real Madrid. And they still have that thing. Maybe it'll come into focus later in the competition if Madrid can make it through, that no team has won two UEFA Champions League titles in a row. That can't be a coincidence. There must be a reason why it's very, very difficult to do it.
Yeah, it is. Just amazing, though. It's going to be, you know, 12 months ago, Zinedine Zidane had only just taken over from Rafael Benitez. It seems a lot longer than that. And, of course, his first game was against Italian opposition. They beat Roma in the Stadio Olimpico. They went through and then went all the way. Just amazing what he's achieved in 12 months. I think this tie, it could be really entertaining, and particularly that game at the Stadio San Paolo. The atmosphere is going to be absolutely unbelievable.
OK, let's have your predictions. Who's joining Barca, Dortmund and Bayern in your prediction for the quarterfinals?
I'm going to go for Napoli, because otherwise I'm just going to go for all the favourites. I think Napoli have a fighting chance. I may be made to look a fool when Real Madrid run away with it in Cardiff and win back-to-back UEFA Champions League titles, but I think Napoli might spring a surprise.
Napoli have got a chance, but I think probably Madrid have just got that extra quality.
Okay, very good, guys. A reminder that the second leg of those ties, by the way, will be on Tuesday, the 7th of March. The first leg, Wednesday, the 15th. Of February. The second week of the knockout stages begins on Tuesday, the 21st of February, with a familiar looking tie. It is Atletico and Leverkusen who meet at this stage as they did two seasons ago. The pair of 1-0 wins. It took the tie to penalties.
Kiesling, right footed, over the bar! Atletico Madrid are through! Torres with the crucial penalty, Kiesling with an equally crucial miss, and Atletico Madrid advance to the quarterfinals of the UEFA Champions League, winning 3-2 on penalties.
Well, it was a special night for Atletico as they got past Bayer Leverkusen. Paul, does the fact that these two sides met previously so recently play any part for you?
I don't think particularly. I think, if anything, I'd expect Atletico to be a slightly more superior now. Atletico, the following season, last season, as it now is, then went all the way to the final. They've proved a team that's really, really difficult to beat in these two-legged knockout ties. They've, of course, finished above Bayern in their group. Bayern, I think we can safely say, from looking at the Bundesliga table, a much better team than Leverkusen, who may be fortunate that Tottenham imploded when they went to Wembley and kind of allowed Leverkusen to steal a march on that second place. I don't think Leverkusen would claim that they were brilliant in the group stage, and they've been decidedly mixed before the winter break in the Bundesliga. Of course, they have had injuries. There's no doubt about that. Whereas Atletico, they've been exciting to watch going forward. You mentioned Griezmann, who, of course, got in the UEFA Team of the Year, and there's plenty more talent where that's come from, and they've been so difficult to beat in defence as well, as they always are under Simeone.
The last 2 years, we heard about the penalty shootout win against Leverkusen. It was penalties in the round of 16 in 2016 as well against PSV. So despite being, you know, one of the European superpowers, they have struggled a little bit at the round of 16 and only just gone through recently. I just wonder whether Chicharito, Javier Hernandez, might have something to say as well. He hasn't been as prolific in the Bundesliga, but remember when he was at Real Madrid on that season, he knocked Atleti out with the winner in a very tight tie in the quarterfinals, I think, and they'll need him to play well. From Atletico's point of view, they haven't quite been for their very high standards recently. They have dropped off a little bit, but they do seem to come alive in the back end of the UEFA Champions League. And, you know, I know you're going to ask me for my prediction. I think it's quite difficult over two legs to see Leverkusen overcoming Atleti.
I think the problem potentially for Leverkusen is their steel and strength. I mean, they're coming up against one of the toughest teams in Europe. And Bayer still built largely around youth players. We've seen the likes of Henrichs and Havertz come into the team this season, Paul.
Yeah, I don't think, as you say, we've seen that they're a team that can be beaten. They're a team that have proved they can be beaten by much weaker teams than Atletico. And as I still come back in the group stage, I think they got a huge stroke of luck from how Tottenham played against them. And of course, Leverkusen kind of threw away their good chances against Monaco as well, when they could have put themselves in a much more comfortable situation there as well. So whereas Atletico may not have been at their absolute best, at least in the league, or I think in the UEFA Champions League, they played very well indeed. But Leverkusen haven't looked an outstanding team. There probably will be better teams from Germany now to take on Atletico than Bayer.
Leverkusen mid-table in the Bundesliga going into the winter break. Atletico in the running for UEFA Champions League football. It looks more like than the title race this season. So are you both going for Atletico, Paul?
I think I've made it fairly clear that I don't think Leverkusen have
the strength
to beat them.
Okay, I'm just asking. There's no need to be snappy. Chris, is it Atletico?
Yes, Rob, it's Atletico.
Okay, very good. Okay, let's move on to the other tie that night. Also starting on the 21st of February is Manchester City against Monaco, with City boss Pep Guardiola pleased that his side are becoming regular qualifiers for the knockout stages.
For the club is amazing. Last year it was the first time arriving in the semi-finals, so we are new in that competition, so it's the fourth time in a row we are in 80 finals, so that is good for the club, step by step, to try to compete with the best teams.
Manchester City faced Monaco for the first ever time, but they'd be wrong to underestimate Monaco, certainly.
They would. I think this group of young players in particular, okay, the likes of Fabinho, he's been there for a couple of years, and I think they signed Kamil Glik in the summer, the Poland centre-back, to really, he's a magnificent footballer. Slightly surprised that Monaco were able to sort of sneak in there and sign him ahead of maybe some of the traditionally bigger sides. I think I've already mentioned Lemar and Bernardo Silva. I think they have a really exciting team, an attack-minded team. And Manchester City, as we've mentioned, they do concede an awful lot of goals. I just wonder with Pep Guardiola there, we heard him. He seems to be on a bit of a crusade to dampen expectations. You know, this is a guy who's never failed to reach the semi-finals of the UEFA Champions League in all of his seasons as a coach, which is a phenomenal record. OK, people will say, well, he's been at Barca and Bayern. It's still a fantastic record. And I just wonder whether he's just trying to dampen expectations. Leonardo Jardim has already called them massive favourites, as, you know, you tend to get that slanging match before this stage of the competition. But they really shouldn't underestimate Monaco, and I don't think they will. You just have to look at the table in Ligue 1 and the group stage when they've already been to Tottenham and won to suggest that Monaco are a really, really good side.
I think also you mentioned there's one other player, Radamel Falcao, of course, who has got a lot to prove in England after he had that horrible time at Manchester United. So he'll be very motivated. The interesting about Manchester City, of course, is they'll have a couple of signs in there. Gabriel Jesus, I mean, who knows if he's going to be straight up to European football level, the young Brazilian, but that's an exciting signing. And effectively, Yaya Toure, who, of course, isn't a new signing, but wasn't in the UEFA Champions League squad in the group stage, has recently come into their Premier League team and been playing fantastically, has been really been running the team more even than, say, De Bruyne. Yaya Toure has almost taken over as the most important player in recent weeks. You presume he'll be added to the UEFA Champions League squad. You are allowed to add three players, so he'll be eligible. And if he can come in and he can make a difference, he could be the man to take the game to Monaco. And of course, Monaco will know about him because a decade ago he played for them.
Yeah, he did. I think City are definitely a side who are going to improve as the season goes on. Pep Guardiola, he has that way of playing that we've seen. It's been so successful. It does take time, you know, and maybe personnel as well. And maybe he will strengthen in January as well. Paul's already mentioned Jesus coming in. And I think they will be better by the time they play Monaco in February than they currently are.
It's going to be interesting to see if City can cope with that dynamic attacking plan. I think to Yaya Toure getting rather bossed in midfield against Real Madrid last season, if he can cope with the tempo that Monaco bring. Lots of goals in that Monaco team as well. I mean, after 13 league games, Falcao has 11 in Ligue 1. Carrillo with 7, Germain with 5, Lemar with 6. They've got goals all over the park. So who is going through from this one?
Manchester City. Just. I think this will be two really, really entertaining games, but I think City will just have enough.
I'm really looking forward to it, and I've got a sneaky feeling for Monaco.
OK, Paul's going for Monaco. Chris is going for Manchester City.
How about you?
I'm going to go for Monaco. I do think Monaco are going to go through, although Rohan has tweeted in at Champions League to say Manchester City are going to win the UEFA Champions League trophy this year because they have the class in the squad. We will only win, though, if Pep brings in a defender. And let's talk about whether Pep Guardiola might do that before the end of the transfer window. The second legs of Leverkusen, Atletico and Manchester City against Monaco in Madrid and Monte Carlo will be on Wednesday, the 15th of March. OK, on to Wednesday, the 22nd of February. It's the first leg between two former winners. It's Porto against Juventus, with Porto striker André Silva in a positive mood.
I can't predict the future, but I can guarantee that we will continue to go to every match with the same attitude. We want to win every game we play, and it will be with that thought that we will enter the field.
It is a rematch of the 1984 UEFA Cup Winners' Cup final in Basel, a tie which Juventus did win in the end. Chris, Juventus surely favourites for this one.
Yeah, they are. Can they finally go all the way, having narrowly missed out in two finals since their last win in 1996? And of course, that great stat that Gigi Buffon, who's said that he's going to carry on going until the World Cup in 2018. He's never won the trophy, despite all of his heroics. They're definitely favourites for this tie. André Silva there is going to, you know, it's a big moment for him, I think. So much has been talked about him. He's scored so many goals. Young Portuguese superstar. But now he's up against Juve in that defence, which is still, OK, they brought in Higuain and Pjanic and Dybala last summer, or Dybala the year before, but he's still that, you know, Bonucci, Barzagli, Chiellini, Buffon. If André Silva can succeed against them, he really will put himself in the window for a really big move, potentially, in the summer. I just wonder, you know, Bonucci signed a new deal the back end of 2016. That, to me, says that he thinks that this is maybe their moment, Juve, maybe their last moment to win this trophy for a while with the group of players that they have. Chiellini and Buffon and Barzagli aren't going to go on forever. But I would put them as definite favourites against Porto. Question for me is, can Juve go all the way and win it?
Well, I've got a lot of time for André Silva at the moment because I handed him my fantasy armband as captain on match day 6 against Leicester, and he rewarded me by picking up dozens and dozens of points and taking me up all the tables. So I'd be delighted if he was to do it against Juventus. As you say, it'll be very tough for them, particularly that second leg. Juve are so formidable at home at the moment in Serie A. They're winning so many games in a row and difficult in UEFA Champions League. And that's going to be a problem because Porto have to have a great performance at home. They're going to really need Iker Casillas to keep that clean sheet, not allow any away goals for Juventus, because otherwise they may be going to second leg without much chance. I mean, they'll take some heart from how they played against Leicester, even if it wasn't necessarily a full Leicester team. In fact, they really showed some class there, particularly Andre Silva, the way he was able to run the game. So there is potential for them, but as Chris said, there are so many more ways you can see Juventus winning than Porto.
They have added to their squad as well, Juve, early in the winter transfer window. Thomas Rincon from Genoa signing on a 3-year deal. The Venezuela captain can play in defensive midfield or a right back as well. You have been tweeting, and many of you are backing Juve to go all the way this year. Azzurroni says, Gigi Buffon and his sidekicks will lift the cup. In Cardiff, I suppose, Chris, as well, what's difficult for Porto is just how good Juve are at home. At one point this season, going 26 home wins in a row in Serie A and Turin.
Yeah, which is an extraordinary stat, and not conceding very many goals in that time, I can tell you. They are absolutely formidable in that Juventus stadium. Remember that the Delle Alpi, which they never really loved, that big bowl of a stadium, quite a long way from the centre. They moved to a smaller, but really compact atmospheric venue, and it's really worked for Juventus. They are terrific. And it, just to come back to Buffon, they last met in 2001 in the group stage. Gigi Buffon was in goal for Juventus there. And he's still going, and he's just getting better. As far as Porto, having finished runners-up, they were delighted just to get through. I think this is almost as tough as it gets.
It might also be a meeting of the best two goalkeepers of the 21st century in Casillas and Buffon, but which one's coming out on top? Chris, you first this time.
Has to be Juve.
I think Juve will beat Porto.
OK, on the same night as Porto against Juventus, the first leg in Spain between English champions Leicester City and the UEFA Europa League holders Sevilla. Lots of you have been tweeting in about this one, and some of you even backing Leicester City to go all the way. Dino says Leicester City are the English Premier League champions for a reason. He's backing them to win it. Addison says Leicester because we're the underdogs and it would be another fairy tale for us. I suppose so far, Paul, despite their impressive group stage campaign, we haven't quite seen a Leicester City side that looked like they'd realistically go all the way to Cardiff and win it.
Well, I think that partly down to the group they are in, where Porto and Copenhagen, they weren't up against the very cream. They haven't played any of the really big guns yet. And in Sevilla, maybe they're moving up to a slightly bigger gun than the guns they've had pointed at them before now. But maybe the heavy artillery is still to come, which Leicester will be happy with. They'll have a team they feel that they're on a par with at the very least. And one thing they have done as well, I think the one thing they've lacked, and we've seen this more in the Premier League than UEFA Champions League, is of course they've lost N'Golo Kante from that midfield, the man that held it all together. They've now signed Wilfried Ndidi from Genk, who is at least in the same position. He probably won't play to that huge level that Kante showed in the year just gone. What they will do is maybe allow them to restore that shape they had. And some of the players like Mahrez and the central defenders, they might feel more comfortable with a real midfield anchor back in that position. They'll be able to concentrate more on that, maybe the positions they've been used to playing last season. They may find it a more comfortable formation. And you should never write off Claudio Ranieri. This is, I think, the sixth different team he's gone through a UEFA Champions League group stage with. He knows what he's doing. He'll know everything about Sevilla. Sevilla haven't necessarily been, despite getting through the group stage, I'm not sure this has been a Sevilla team quite as good as maybe under Unai Emery. So there are certainly opportunities for Leicester, even though they'll have to play well above the level they've been showing in the Premier League.
I think I may have to disagree. It's not the Barcelona or the Juventus that some Leicester fans, you know, would have liked that really big name. But I actually think Sevilla, I've got them as dark horses potentially to go very deep in this competition this season. Jorge Sampaoli took over in the summer from Unai Emery. They're playing a brand of football. He's not too dissimilar to Simeone in terms of making their home that fortress, orchestrating the crowd. It's a wonderful atmosphere. They've got brilliant players. Steven Nzonzi has been magnificent, so magnificent that if you believe the reports, he's the man that Pep Guardiola wants to, you know, maybe strengthen his midfield. That's the type of calibre of player Nzonzi has become. I think this is almost as tough as it could have got. They're flying high in the Spanish Liga. They're in the title race alongside Real Madrid and Barcelona and Atletico for a reason. And I think this is a massive step up in quality compared to who Leicester faced in the group stage.
Sevilla certainly seem daunted by the prospect of playing Leicester. I mean, sporting director Monchi said, "We aren't congratulating ourselves after the draw. We've been paired with the champions of England, who put four goals past Manchester City. They've had a great campaign in the group stage, and they'll be very difficult opponents." Leicester did lose their final group game 5-0 at the hands of Porto, but they had kept four clean sheets, and Sergio Rico in the Sevilla goal kept five. Does that mean we're going to see a fairly tight defensive tie, do you think?
Well, a lot obviously comes down to it. So when they go to the fortress in Sevilla, if Leicester can find the scoring boots. Jamie Vardy was up and down maybe in the group stage. Maybe we didn't see the best of him there. Mahrez obviously will be the key creatively, because he did seem the Leicester player who really was able to step up. Of course, Sevilla is a step up from all the teams they played in the group stage. That'll be the key. If Leicester can take Sevilla back home with the tie still alive, they have an opportunity.
That first leg is going to be massive. I think the atmosphere at the Ramon Sanchez Pizjuan will be absolutely magnificent. I think it's important for Sevilla. They've never reached the quarterfinals of the UEFA Champions League. Last appearance, I think, was the European Cup in 1958. So this is whilst it's a huge night for Leicester, they may never come back to the round of 16. We don't know. This is a really noteworthy tie for Sevilla. And what they have to do against Juventus, which was their biggest game so far at home, they really whipped it up into a brilliant atmosphere. They took the lead. And then instead of Juventus buckling, they sort of managed to buckle themselves, and they got a man sent off. Sampaoli got sent from the touchline to the stands, and he's a big part of this, you know, really getting everyone behind. And Sevilla will try and do the same. They have to learn from that Juventus defeat and make sure that it's Leicester who are intimidated, not themselves winding themselves up ultimately, because they lost that game. And if they can do that, I think Leicester's dreamy run will come to an end.
OK, so the first leg of those ties will be the 22nd of February, and Sevilla, Leicester and Porto Juve will meet again then on Tuesday, the 14th of March. Who is going through from Sevilla against Leicester? Paul Saffa. This is a tougher one.
It is tough. Just about Sevilla. But maybe ask me again when the day of the game comes. I might change my mind. But right now, Sevilla.
I think Sevilla. I think they might comfortably beat Leicester.
OK, and just a note to say that we did record this midway through January. So if we didn't mention that big new player that your team has signed, that's probably why. It is going to be a great round of 16. Draw. I think I'm most looking forward to Real Madrid-Napoli, because we don't quite know what those two sides will do against each other. What's your standout tie, Chris?
Well, I can't copy you, because I'm also looking forward to that. Sevilla-Leicester, I think those two teams, what an opportunity for those two clubs to reach the quarterfinals of the UEFA Champions League. Might not come around for a while. They both have to take their chance.
Man City-Monaco, I think that could be an epic, really, really entertaining.
Good call. A surprise packages as well for anyone who can win it. Is there any out of the conventional group that you think can go all the way? Chris, you're nodding. Are you thinking Monaco?
I knocked Monaco out. So,
you did.
Sevilla. I really think under Jorge Sampaoli, they've got something going, a little similar, different style of play, similar to Atletico, particularly at home. I think they're going to be very, very difficult to beat.
I don't know if Juventus count as underdogs compared to Bayern, Real Madrid, Barcelona, they are. But, I mean, it'd be great just to see Gigi Buffon win it.
OK, I'm going for Juventus to win the whole thing, because I think they're going to have Serie A relatively wrapped up, I think, quite early. They've got that lead, and then they can rotate and rest players. Higuain will be fresh for UEFA Champions League games. Who do you think? Paul, it's you first this time. Who's going to win the whole thing?
I don't know about think. I'm just going for what feel what's in my gut. And my
Please.
Gut is Real Madrid will retain the title.
Oof.
Oh,
Chris.
Really? Big call. I think Barcelona. And I think for a similar reason, you said that Juventus are going to have Serie A wrapped up. I wonder whether Barcelona may be too far adrift in the Spanish Liga soon, and therefore the UEFA Champions League. They won't have to worry about getting in a dogfight in that competition. They can go for the title and come back to it. Messi, Suarez, Neymar.
OK, three different teams between the three of us. Very good. That's all we have time for on this podcast special. UEFA Champions League Match Day Live returns on Tuesday, the 14th of February, when Paris Saint-Germain host Barcelona in our main commentary, and we'll have extended coverage of Benfica Dortmund as well. Then on Wednesday, the 15th, we'll bring you Bayern against Arsenal and Real Madrid-Napoli. So join us live during the knockout stages, either via UEFA.com or the official UEFA Champions League app. And don't forget to download our special review podcast after every night of the competition. Keep tweeting us your thoughts to @ Champions League using the hashtag Match Day Live. But for now, it's goodbye from Paul Saffer, Chris Parrott, and myself, Rob Daly. We'll leave you with some of the stars who could light up the competition once more as they fight to be part of the UEFA Champions League final in Cardiff on Saturday, the 3rd of June.
Kevin De Bruyne looking at the ball and hitting it right-footed and scoring an absolute beauty.
It's Lewandowski. It's a wonderful goal. Right into the top left-hand corner. Griezmann with a chance. Griezmann scores the away goal. Superbly done. Suarez squares it for Messi on the hat-trick. 3-0. Messi's done it again. The man for the big occasion. Cristiano Ronaldo scores the winning penalty.
You've been listening to UEFA Champions League Matchday Live.